Welcome or welcome back to Real Recovery. If you're new here, this is a podcast where I talk about anorexia recovery and I give you guys practical tips and advice to help you if you're struggling with an eating disorder. Obviously, disclaimer, and especially for this episode, disclaimer, I'm not a medical professional and nothing that I speak about, you know, is medical advice. Don't take any of this as personal medical advice. Always go and speak to your doctor, your therapist, all of that kind of stuff. Just want to put that out there. Obviously, if you're going through that and you're someone who is struggling with this kind of panic attack problem at school, or you're just in public when this happens, then you're not alone at all. It is a really, really tough thing to deal with though. I'm really glad that I have now got my panic attacks under control and that doesn't happen anymore. When I started recovery from my eating disorder, my anxiety levels actually increased initially, which I think, again, is quite common. It's understandable. But I think after this kind of first bump, if you would say, like, of early recovery, my physical symptoms of anxiety got a lot better, without really doing any therapy for it as well. I didn't have new coping skills yet, but I think that is actually just proof that nutrition is so important. I noticed that when I like stabilized my weight and when I actually started to restore weight, even after just like the smallest amount of weight restoration, my breathing improved, my brain fog improved, and my ability to actually overcome stresses and actually navigate how to do that improved. And it was at this point, like kind of early to mid recovery, that I really got my panic attacks under control. And I will be sharing how I did this. So yeah, I think after a while in recovery, I started taking anxiety medication, specifically sertraline, which is an SSRI. It worked quite well, I think, but I did end up coming off it after about 6 months because of insomnia that it gave me. So now at this point with my anxiety, I no longer have panic attacks, which is obviously like the best thing ever. I'm also very good at spotting the warning signs for panic attacks and preventing them, which I think is key. And over the last year, I have obviously become a lot better at unpacking stresses, specifically with journaling, I think. And I've just got better coping skills for my anxiety in general. So overall, I think it's improved. I still suffer with anxiety, but I think it's not necessarily social anxiety, and often it's not necessarily eating disorder related anxiety. But I do also have OCD, so I understand there's a big overlap there and it's a bit nuanced, so I won't get too much into that. But I do want to be honest with you guys in the fact that I do still struggle with anxiety, especially recently, which is actually obviously makes this even more important that I'm going to be speaking about this, you know, these tools in this episode, because it's been very much relevant to me and it's been something that I've really needed. And it's been something that when I was, especially like last month, I've just been struggling with my anxiety so much, and I found that, you know, the basic core tenets of well-being, like, you know, eat right, get enough sleep, all that kind of stuff, mindfulness, none of that's really worked, and I've needed stuff that's more, you know, I don't know. But anyway, I'm going to be sharing what's worked, basically, for me at least. Now, I'm not on medication, and I don't have regular therapy, which I understand is kind of not great, but you know, I'm trying to get access to that again. Out of the research I've done and the work I've done on anxiety over the past year, especially, and the progress that I've made, because there has been some real progress, I just want to share the things that have made a difference. And you can take what you will. Some of this will work for you, some of it won't. Yeah, I hope this episode can help you. I will have to just skim over the obvious stuff. I know I just kind of dismissed it a bit, but ignoring it is a bit silly. So if you are struggling with severe anxiety and you're not taking care of these basic things, I think that's worth addressing. And obviously you can do it alongside implementing the other tools, which I'm going to get into in a second. But the basic things that really will impact your anxiety levels are obviously caffeine intake, your sleep, nutrition, which I know, eating disorder podcast, eating disorder recovery, I understand that some of you guys are struggling with that. So yeah, but it's still worth mentioning, dealing with stresses and problems and like actual issues in your life. If you ignore them and procrastinate them, then that's going to impact your anxiety. Medication will impact your anxiety, whether that's, you know, needing a prescription for anxiety medication, or whether that's you are taking medication for another issue, mental or physical, and anxiety is a side effect. That's also worth addressing. Therapy is obviously going to impact your anxiety levels, and dehydration. So if those things are things that you are having issues with, it is worth addressing that and seeing what difference that makes to your anxiety levels. Now, let's get into the tools that I have found through research and experience for immediately reducing anxiety levels in a time of acute stress. Okay, so the first one is something that I found out quite recently, and I don't know whether that's me being very clueless for most of my life, or whether this is actually quite an obscure technique and something that not many people know about. It works so well, and it's basically double inhale breathing. It's sometimes referred to as 4-7-8 breathing, and it's basically a relaxation technique that's used to reduce stress and anxiety. It involves, basically what you do is you inhale through the nose for a count of 4, then you inhale again through a count of 7, and then you exhale through the mouth for a count of 8. So basically it ends up being like, instead of breathing in out, like you end up doing in out. So it's, I don't know whether you could hear that through the mic, but yeah, that's basically all it is. And you don't have to do it for 4, 7, 8 counts. You don't really have to worry about that. If you're in, like I said, a time of acute stress where you literally can't think, you can't feel, your whole brain is just flooded with fear and anxiety and panic, what you can do is, instead of doing, you know, your usual basic deep breathing exercises, which is basically what is normally recommended, I found that when I'm in that kind of state, honestly, I find it so difficult to inhale. My chest gets very tight. As I've said, I do struggle with asthma. I don't know how much of a role that does play, but for me personally, I've always found it very difficult to do that deep inhale. And then that actually has the effect of putting me into that anxious spiral. I'm anxious because I can't breathe properly, and then I can't breathe properly because I'm anxious. So me finding out about the fact that double inhale breathing has actually an incredible effect on reducing anxiety and stress in as little as 3 to 4 of these double inhale breaths, I thought that was amazing, and it honestly works. It works wonders. Honestly, do it now. If you're anxious right now, do it. Do it for 3-4 times. Do it up to 10 times and see what difference it makes. I find personally that it is so much easier to get that larger amount of oxygen in if I do it in 2 steps on the inhale. So apparently the science behind this technique is basically about the ability of it to activate the body's relaxation response, which then counteracts the body's physiological stress response. It's got an effect of reducing heart rate. A podcast episode by Huberman Lab, I think it's called. It was a great episode. I didn't listen to it all, but I did learn this technique from that, and I actually learned another technique from that, which is my next tip. Full credit to, I think his name is Andrew Huberman. It's a very popular neuroscience podcast. I recommend everyone listen to it if they're interested. But the next tip that I found out from that was about widening your vision. This is very useful at, again, reducing your physiological stress response. Basically, when we are anxious, we tend to narrow our attention and focus on a threat or source of anxiety, and this can actually manifest physically. So we have literal tunnel vision, which can make it hard to see or appreciate other aspects of our environment, which then obviously just perpetuates the feelings of fear and helplessness. So by consciously expanding your visual field, you are actually able to shift your attention away from the anxiety-provoking stimulus or, you know, perceived stimulus, and towards other more neutral, positive aspects of your environment. And this helps you feel more grounded and less overwhelmed. And also by literally relaxing your facial muscles and your eyes, which then signals to the rest of your body that it's okay and that you can reduce your anxiety. I don't think there's a lot of actual research specifically on this technique of widening your vision, almost encouraging your eyes to have this sort of panoramic view. I found that when I'm out and about walking, I do actually literally have a tunnel vision, in the sense that it quite literally goes dark around my peripheral. Now, I don't notice this at all when it's happening. I have to consciously check in and remind myself that I need to literally sit there or stand there and relax my eye muscles so that I can widen my field of view. This sounds very tricky to do, but honestly, you kind of just have to, you have to experiment and and try and see if you can do this, because again, it works wonders at physically lowering your stress levels, because as I've said, it's got that effect of working on your nervous system. And yeah, I really recommend everyone does this. If you find that you're out and about and you are having this feeling of overwhelm and uncontrollable anxiety, you might notice also that the areas surrounding you and your like peripheral vision, they are quite dark, and you are having this sort of intense focus on like a smaller area of vision basically. And what you have to do is you just have to make a conscious effort to relax your face and relax your eyes and take in your surroundings, and honestly that really does work wonders. But anyway, my next tip number three is a simple one to immediately reduce your stress levels. It's basically just cool down. Obviously it's summer now, if you're in the UK at least. It's been very hot recently, and I think it's no surprise that that can have an effect of increasing your anxiety. And for me personally, I found that when I am super anxious, my hands get really hot, my face gets really hot, my feet get hot. I feel like for me, cooling down immediately reduces anxiety. It makes me feel more physically comfortable. It's also something that seems really simple and that seems like, well, obviously, like, but I think when you're in that state, it's sometimes just useful to have someone remind you of the basics. And yeah, washing your hands in cold water, splashing your face, having a cold shower, drinking cold water, all of that kind of stuff can feel very refreshing and very calming and relaxing. And it's really helpful for me. And it's also something that it works in that sense of like a mindfulness practice of like bringing you into the present moment and focusing on physical sensations rather than, you know, mental distress. So yeah. So my next tip four, is specifically listening to music with low beats per minute. This has actually got some research behind it that shows that listening to slow, calming music does reduce anxiety levels in many, many groups of individuals. Apparently there's a few different ways that this occurs. The first one is heart rate synchronization. So some studies have found that certain types of slow, calming music helps synchronize our heart rates with the rhythm of the music. So if you're listening to slow music, this will lead to a decrease in heart rate. And this just shifts the body into a more relaxed state, which obviously is going to reduce your anxiety. Again, I will link some articles below. The second mechanism is neural synchronization. So some studies have found that listening to calming music can increase activity in the parasympathetic nervous system, which is responsible for promoting relaxation. It's the opposite of your stressful nervous system. And this can lead to a decrease in the production of cortisol, which is a stress hormone. It's something that you probably have found through experience. You probably are someone who does find music helpful. A lot of people do. If you want to really optimize this technique, it has been shown that music with a slow tempo or lower beats per minute, typically around 60 to 80, will have a good effect on reducing your anxiety. So have a go with that today if you want to, if you feel anxious today. My next tip is to do with deep pressure. So this is also something that has been researched. It is specifically researched in the context of autism a lot of the time. I know that several of you guys actually do have autism. So I think, again, this might be helpful. It might already be something you use, something you do. Deep pressure has, again, the effect of regulating your nervous system. It can be provided by a weighted blanket, but equally, if you don't have that, because often they are quite expensive, you can use anything really, anything that provides a sense of deep pressure. I'm just gonna rattle off some stuff that I've done in the past to implement this without a weighted blanket. I would literally lie on the floor and get someone to put books all over me, like big heavy books, like line them up all down my body. Also, what you can do is just lie flat on the floor. That has the effect of deep pressure. Similarly, you can do push-ups. That has the effect of deep pressure. You can get a hug from someone, like get someone to give you a tight hug. Yeah, all of those kind of things. Basically, what they do is they activate the parasympathetic nervous system, which promotes relaxation. It basically, decreases the production of stress hormones And there have been some studies, such as a randomised placebo-controlled study published in the Journal of Child and Adolescent Psychopharmacology, which found that wearing a weighted vest had a calming effect on anxiety levels in children with autism. There was also a study in the Journal of Occupational Therapy that found a deep pressure using a weighted blanket can reduce psychological and behavioural signs of anxiety in adults. There's also a couple more which I will link down below, but I don't want to bore you guys. I do recommend that you try some form of deep pressure in those times of intense overwhelm and anxiety, and that was actually how I've been managed to prevent panic attacks. When I do feel one coming on, what I do is I lie face down on the floor, or I squeeze myself into a ball, I put my head between my knees, and that effect of both the deep pressure and the movement of my head down sends the blood flow to my brain. It reduces sensory input, so I don't see things, I don't hear things, because I'm blocking out the light, I'm often blocking my ears. I've got that deep pressure on my eyes and my face and my chest, and I found all of that incredibly, incredibly helpful for reducing the panic attack onset. So I recommend you go and try that. My next tip is this number 5, I think it's number 5, is to do with lighting. So dim lighting and especially red light have also been found to have calming effects for most people, or some people at least. It's thought that it's due to the production of melatonin, which is a hormone that helps regulate sleep and mood. And there are some sources that support this. There's not a huge amount, but I've noticed personally that when I'm super anxious, especially in the evenings, what I do is I switch light. So you can do this on your phone, you can change the settings of your screen display so that it produces a softer yellow light. Similarly, if you do have a light in your bedroom or wherever you are, try and get one that has a softer, dimmer lighting, like not a bright kind of harsh white light. Even having a red light source can be calming. Now, if you don't want to buy a new light, you don't have this, you can buy tinted glasses that have a red filter on them, and I found that this is just helpful for me for reducing my anxiety. Again, it's not a huge difference it will make, but I noticed that it does make quite a quick difference, and it's useful if you do struggle with sleep related to anxiety problems. So I recommend you try that. There was a study published in the Journal of Physiological Anthropology which found that exposure to red light reduced activity in the sympathetic nervous system and cortisol levels, resulting in increased relaxation and decreased anxiety in study participants. So your sympathetic nervous system is your, like, the opposite of your relaxing one, so have a decrease in that is a good thing. There's also a couple more which I will again link down below, which takes me to my next point, which is about blood sugar. Now, obviously there is a caveat of, I know I'm speaking to a group of people who do struggle with eating disorders, so I know that blood sugar is not as cut and dry as it would be for other people. I know that some of you have problems with restricting. I also know that some of you are going to be in recovery, maybe going through a period of extreme hunger where you do have to be eating a lot more, and that will also involve differences in your blood sugar levels. So again, I just want you to take this next tip with a pinch of salt. When blood glucose levels drop too low, the body releases adrenaline and other stress hormones, and obviously this contributes to anxiety. And there are so many sources that support this idea, which I will not read out to you, but I will link below. Obviously not everyone is equally sensitive to changes in blood sugar levels, and just because you are experiencing anxiety does not mean that it is directly related to your blood sugar. But it's also not unusual for people with anorexia, with bulimia, with other eating disorders to have disturbances in their blood sugar levels. If you are someone who is struggling with restriction at the moment and you are not fueling yourself adequately, you will be experiencing these levels of hypoglycemia when your blood sugar is getting too low, and you will have more adrenaline, more cortisol, and you will also have decreased ability in your brain to actually function and manage these side effects and these symptoms. So it's just going to be a lot more difficult for you, and when you do start fueling yourself properly, and by that I do actually mean eating a very generous amount. If you're someone who is struggling with meals and snacks and not having that regular eating where you're eating every couple of hours, I really recommend you try it just to keep a stable blood sugar, because it will just make sure that that isn't something that is going to be influencing your anxiety levels. If you're someone who is doing quite well with that and you are eating a generous amount, or you're someone who is eating something that, you know, is prescribed by a dietitian, meal plan or whatever, then keep going with that, obviously. If you're getting these random spikes of anxiety during the day, is it around meal times? Specifically, is it just before a meal, or is it in a period of the day where you've gone a few hours without eating? If so, I recommend eating, specifically eating something that is going to actually satiate you, not just something that your eating disorder is going to consider safe. I think it's really important to just put that in place. And if you're struggling with, well, I wish I could, but, you know, I'm too scared or whatever, I think have the motivation that it's going to be helpful for your mental health. And if you're someone who's really struggling with your mental health, I think that's a big deal. I think it's something that is going to be quite a good pull factor, and it's going to motivate you to make that change in your diet and in your recovery. I think it's just really, really important to eat to your hunger cues. If you're someone who is already eating, maybe you're already following a meal plan, you know, the typical 3 meals, 3 snacks, but to be quite honest, you might need more. It's very likely that you might need more snacks, just to, yeah, tide you over and make sure that you are keeping yourself in a state of energy balance, honestly. So yeah, it's just worth mentioning. My next tip is my final tip, actually. Oh no, it's not my final. I've got one more after this. It is something that has been incredibly helpful for me. It's something that doesn't have the same immediate effect as the other tips that I've mentioned, but it's basically journaling. Now, I've done a whole episode where I spoke about a journaling exercise, I'm pretty sure. On my Instagram, I'm pretty sure I do also have highlighted a story sequence that I did the other month about journaling for anxiety, which I recommend you go and check out. I hope it is still up there. But basically, there are several different exercises that I use on a very, very regular basis. If you're interested in that, then by all means reach out, and I might have to make a whole episode on different exercises that I do. I will kind of break down one just to help you guys with that, because it's been the thing that I do find the most useful, and it's very versatile. So whatever state you're in, you can kind of modify this to suit your needs. But basically, it's about being a detective of sorts. I noticed that when I'm in a state of very intense acute anxiety that will not go away and that I don't know how to get out of, often I'm not quite sure what the trigger is, or if I am sure what the trigger is, I feel like there's often more behind it which I can't quite figure out, I can't quite concentrate on. So what I do is I break it down by writing. The act of writing also calms me down, personally. So what I do usually is I write down who, what, when, why, how, and I go from that framework. Basically, I kind of just go through unpacking what the feeling is, and I label the feeling. So I'll start by doing, what am I feeling right now? You can use a feelings wheel to help you figure this one out, because often when I'm in that state, again, it's very difficult to formulate thoughts. It's very difficult to identify emotions. But usually what ends up, you know, coming out is that I'm feeling, you know, panicked, nervous, afraid, overwhelmed. And then what I'll do is I'll go into more detail. I'll be like, how is this manifesting physically in my body? And I'll write that down, you know, tight chest, you know, difficulty breathing, fast heart rate, being hot, all that kind of stuff. Then what I'll do is I'll write down when, and then I'll answer the question of when did this happen. You know, I'll kind of detail my circumstances, and usually what I'll find is that this onset happened at a time when maybe I was hungry, maybe I had just come back from something that was quite stressful, maybe I was like working and I hit a wall, or I couldn't do something, or I received a stressful text message. There's often a very obvious trigger, which is just worth noting. Then what I'll do is I'll write who, and I'll unpack if there was someone that has triggered my anxiety, or equally if there's someone that I can go to who will help me. That question is about focusing on the support you can get from other people, or if it's something that you need to work on interpersonally, if there's something going on with your family or your friends, whatever. It's just, again, worth noting. The next thing is what, where, when, why, how. Oh yeah, when. Where. It's basically just focusing on your environment. So your environment when you were triggered to feel this way, as well as your environment now. And if there's some things that you can do to improve your environment, to make yourself more comfortable. It's all about focusing on your surroundings and really becoming a detective in the sense of figuring out maybe if you're in a state of being triggered by something sensory in your environment, or if there's something sensory that you can do to improve your state. The next one, it's the second most important thing, is why. So it's why are you feeling this way? Are there things that are bothering you? When you're listing these things, it's okay to not have solutions. It's okay to just kind of brain dump, to splurge a bit. It doesn't have to be neat, it doesn't have to be perfect. Just write down any reason that you could be anxious. And then this is the next point, the most important thing is how. Just write, how can I feel better? Underline it. Now what you've got to do is you've got to look at the sections that you've written previously about the reasons why you're anxious, the maybe possible things that have impacted your anxiety. You're going to go through and you're going to brainstorm a solution for each of these things. Some of them will be the same. So for example, if you have a few sensory things that are impacting your anxiety, the solution to those things might be the same, to either remove the stressor or to, you know, get physically comfortable, whether that be have a shower, change your clothes, whatever. Some of these solutions are going to be very difficult. They're going to be very multi-step, and then not going to be something that you have the time or energy to focus on right then and there. So what you've got to do is, if something is really bothering you, maybe you've had an argument with someone, maybe you've got a deadline, whatever it may be, write down, deal with such and such by making an action plan to deal with it tomorrow at 10 a.m. or whatever. Have an action plan, basically. Have something in place that you can have security and feel safe that you know what you're doing to address it, even though in that moment you might not be able to actually address it. Some things are going to be solutions in the sense that they're just going to be a bit of reminding yourself of true facts or affirmations or reminders or mantras or whatever, and just writing those things down and reminding yourself of those positive affirmations and stuff like that. That's going to help you. So your how am I going to feel better section is going to be quite long, and there's going to be some tangible steps. There's going to be some very quick steps that you can just make in just adjusting your environment. There's also going to be some broader things that are going to be more of a plan to take action rather than actually taking action. And all of that list of things, that's going to, if you implement some of it, or even all of it if you can, then that's going to make you feel better anxiety wise and I do that quite frequently. Obviously it is quite time consuming, this exercise, but it's also something that is incredibly helpful, and I recommend that you do it. If you can't do the full thing, then it's worth literally just jotting down, get your notes app out on your phone if you're out and about in public, try do the who, what, where, why, how question model, where you just kind of ask yourself what's wrong, what's up, why is this happening, is there anything obvious that I can spot that's contributing to this? And then more importantly, how can I make myself feel better in this moment? And it's worth just physically going through those motions and steps and writing it out. And I find that really helpful for myself. So yeah, those were all my evidence-based tools to reduce anxiety immediately. And I really, really hope you found this episode helpful. If you have, please, please rate the podcast, review it, share it even. All of those things, they just really, really help with the algorithms, and they just help more people find the podcast, and hopefully those people will be able to listen and get some help from these episodes. So to all the people who already have done that, I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Now I'm just going to go into a little mini update on me and where I've been and my recovery. But if you're not interested in that, then I will, you know, see you in the next episode. Thank you so much for listening. I really, really appreciate you being here. And yeah, I hope you found the episode today helpful, and I hope you have a great week. But for everyone who's going to stay, I'm just going to update you guys, because some of you guys have very kindly reached out and asked how I'm doing, which is really, really sweet. Now, I have been really inactive on my Instagram. It's not anything crazy. It's just that I've been really, really struggling a lot with my mental health recently, the past few weeks. I've mentioned in previous episodes that I do struggle with OCD and anxiety, as well as my eating disorder. I think I've just hit a bit of a rough patch with both of those things. It's been very difficult to just function normally, and every day has been a literal battle at some points. I think now though, I am starting to feel a bit more like myself, a bit better. Unfortunately, I don't really have therapy for this at the moment, or medication, so if you're in the same boat as me, you're not alone. I do feel quite, yeah, like lost with my OCD at the moment. I am quite, you know, struggling quite a lot with it. I am trying to find out more about what options are available for OCD, and hopefully I will obviously find ways of recovering from it, similar to my eating disorder recovery. But if that's something that people are interested in, I am happy to speak more about OCD, but I think it's probably something I would have to wait until I got a better handle on it. I don't really see any point of speaking about things that I don't personally feel confident in or like I've got anything useful to add. It sort of brings me to my next point, which is an update on my anorexia recovery. I can say that I've not relapsed at all. I'm still doing quite well, and I think it's a great sign of progress, actually, because given the amount of trouble I've had with my mental health over the last few weeks, I think the fact that I've managed to cope without, you know, resorting to restriction is actually really good. I think that being said, I do feel that I have not been doing as well in recovery as I have previously. I feel like previously I've been making kind of progress forwards and onwards and upwards kind of thing, but I've been finding that recently I've just been finding it difficult mentally and physically to keep going. And I think honestly, I do think that I have noticed a lot of, well, actually not a lot, but a reasonable amount of old eating sort of thoughts and behaviours kind of resurfaced. For example, weirdly, the urge to kind of body check, which is odd for me because, as I've mentioned in previous episodes, I really have done very well with body image, rewiring those kind of negative beliefs and stuff. So I did find that quite odd. Now, I think my kind of response to that is actually interesting. I look at it as a symptom of my current mental state and stress rather than I don't feel the need anymore to take these thoughts or these compulsions seriously, and I find it relatively easy to not act on them. And the reason that I'm opening up about this to you guys, because I do find it difficult to open up about struggling, but I think it's really important actually to showcase that yes, I have been struggling, especially with anxiety and OCD and to an extent with my eating disorder again, but I think the point of me opening up about this is a good thing, because I know that some of you guys don't believe in recovery. I know that some of you guys are listening and thinking that you'll never be able to change how you view yourself. You'll never be able to change how your eating disorder shows up and how you have these thoughts and these actions and these behaviours. But I want to try and prove that despite severe stress and struggling with other things, the work I've done in rewiring and all that kind of stuff, it really does have an effect. It has an impact. And me struggling now is nowhere near the same intensity that me struggling a year ago would have been with anorexia thoughts and behaviours and stuff. And equally, the feeling of invalidation is not there anymore. The feeling of needing to be sick enough is not there anymore. So many of these key kind of characteristics of anorexia have just completely gone. And it's been through work, obviously hard work on my part, but it's also just mindset shifts and time, honestly, and just sticking with recovery. So I think it's just proof that so much of the mental distress that an eating disorder causes goes away. I know that behaviours and thoughts and urges and compulsions don't always go away, or rather they do, but it will take a lot longer. So I just wanted to share that I have actually been struggling with this and I have noticed some things resurface. Having a bump in the road, it's just an understandable and reasonable response to stress, in my opinion, for me personally. I just wanted to open up about that and share that with you guys, because I think that sometimes setbacks or even just periods of having kind of stagnation with no progression and no improvements, they're kind of okay, they're normal, and it's all about the direction of overall travel. Obviously, if you're going 6 months without having any kind of progress or improvement in your eating disorder, it is really worth seeking more help and trying something different. But I think having a couple of weeks where, or a few weeks on my experience where I've just been noticing that my recovery's been a hell of a lot harder, I've noticed some resurfacing of different thoughts and behaviours and stuff. But I think, yeah, it's okay that I have these little setbacks, but it's also important to, you know, push on and, you know, honestly stay positive. I know that's kind of cringy, but I really do value positivity and being hopeful and optimistic, that's the word. Anyway, the other point of me opening up about this and my kind of recent struggles and updating you guys is just that I want to be honest and I want to be almost transparent with you guys, because although I am very positive about my own recovery, I think that despite that, I haven't felt comfortable posting on my Instagram because I just want to keep it a positive and helpful space, and I would feel really disingenuous and hypocritical to keep posting, you know, like tips and tricks for recovery if I wasn't taking them myself or if I just wasn't feeling confident in them. You know, I would never do that. So, and I know that some people do like to kind of showcase their struggle online and be kind of, you know, showing the reality of an eating disorder and showing all the negative things that they go through and being vulnerable and all that kind of stuff. And I honestly think there really is a time and place for that, and I think that it can be useful and help people feel less alone, but I don't think that's something that I want to do, just because I think there's enough of that out there for starters. There's a lot of people doing that kind of stuff, and I think that in, you know, recovery spaces, I think what we do need is content that isn't triggering in any sense, and I think we need content that is helpful, that is practical, that has tips and for people who are struggling. But I want those tips to come from a place of me having done them and having worked. I don't just want to talk rubbish. I don't want to just tell you guys things that hypothetically could work in a fantasy world. I want to come from a place of I'm doing such and such, or I have done such and such, and it has worked for me, and it has worked for other people, and here are the reasons why it works, and then provide research and information. That's what I want, and that's what I want my account to be. So I think me taking a break, taking a step back just while I'm struggling is a good thing. If you disagree and you think that people should be sharing their struggles openly, then that's fine. Everyone's entitled to their opinion, and I think there are a lot of accounts that do that, and they do that really well, some of them. It's just the reason that I personally haven't been posting. I've been very inactive. That's the reason why, to be quite honest, is that I haven't been in a good place, and I don't want to perpetuate that and share that with other people, because yeah, I just don't really feel the need to do that. But equally, I think, you know, it's okay to have setbacks. It's okay to be honest about them. If you have listened to all of this and you are interested and you have taken the time to hear me out on this, then I really, really appreciate you, and I hope that you are doing well, and I hope that all of us together can continue to improve and continue to make progress and take care of ourselves, honestly. But I think last 2 weeks maybe, I've been genuinely feeling a bit better. Today especially I'm feeling a lot better, which is why I'm recording. But yeah, so I'm really excited actually to come back on my Instagram, start posting again. I think that these setbacks can make you a lot stronger because you learn a lot from them. So me going through this period of intense anxiety attacks, and not panic attacks, I don't really know what the word is, but kind of overwhelm and getting into that horrible space so frequently, has prompted me to research and find these tips to reduce them, which has resulted in me being able to share them with you guys. So it's very useful in certain senses, I suppose. Silver linings. And I think the bumps in the road in dealing with problems with your mental health honestly does make you stronger when you come out the other side. So I will be sharing the things that have been helping me, that are helping me on a daily basis in multiple ways, especially to do with eating disorders, since I know that that is what most people are here for. I hope you have a good week. Rate, review, do all that good stuff. You know the drill. And I will see you in the next episode. Thank you.